for us, incredibly crisp. So I think we'll be done in under 2 hours, which I think has been the way of done. And I think the way that I've enjoyed, not enjoyed doing it, but I feel is necessary to do it for the terseness, is to kind of go through your entire kind of review of the person, even if it's a little bit long-winded. And so I haven't been like leaving places for you to jump in on my analysis of a player. I've got obviously fairly copious notes to, that I'm working from here. All right.
You know, I'm flexible.
you have always been that. You have always been that. I really appreciate it. All right. So let's go with that. I'll count us in here in just a second. We'll start with your number six, but we'll talk back about what happened on that first show.
Okay.
Right. Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for part two of our countdown of the interior defensive lineman in the 2026 draft. Joining me again is Michael Crawford. Michael, how you doing?
Doing great, Ken. Excited to do this part two, right? We had some really good discussion, I thought, about guys in that first group, some interesting names, and I think this is just going to be a continuation.
Yeah, not too much duplication. We did have a couple of guys that you have, and then I had also, but, you know, Landon Robinson, Caleb Proctor, a couple smaller guys. I think the question came up a little bit about whether or not this is a particularly deep draft at the position. There also seems to be a problem, I would say, generally with a lot of duplication of the players the Ravens have. The Ravens, the specific player the Ravens really need, and in my opinion, is a three tech who can really rush the passer effectively and be the normal size for a three tech, maybe would also be the other thing. And there just aren't very many of those in this draft.
No, this is, a little bit of a less deep, you know, not a little shallower class than we've had at the interior defensive line position. And so how that plays out is always interesting when the draft actually starts. And it could be at any position. I mean, we happen to be talking about IDL, but it could be in any position because you start to see a run, right? When there's a shallow class like that, there's a team or two will take, and then like these guys just start coming off the board. And there's usually a round or a range of rounds, let's say one or two rounds, you know, maybe it's third or fourth or fifth, whatever, where that starts to happen. And you go into it as a fan, right? As I'm watching the draft and I'm like, oh, look, there's still, you know, 7-8 guys here in this group that they could take. And then that run hits and it's like, it's wiped out. There's no more of these guys. So I think the Ravens are very good at that. You know, you hear DaCosta talk about that all the time. I think that's something that he actually takes a lot of pride in being able to anticipate where these runs are going to happen on certain positions. So
it's interesting that last year, they had a very deep DL class. The Ravens effectively whiffed on it because the only player they got was Peebles in the sixth round. And particularly when they drafted Carson Vinson, but possibly also Teddy Buchanan, there were options on the defensive line that they could have taken instead. And that ended up obviously being a big weakness. We're happy, I think, with Buchanan's rookie year. Carson Vinson looks like a left tackle of the future, potentially. I don't think you could have any much better outcome from a purely developmental left tackle than what happened with Carson Vinson this last year. Played well in the preseason, played a ton of snaps in the preseason, earned his job as a game day activation over a longtime veteran left tackle in Joe Noteboom by the time the season ended. And I don't think I have a problem with either of those picks, but they did in that weird trade back that they had where they traded back five spots to go up five spots two rounds later because they didn't really know who they wanted to pick. And that was reportedly related to Sanders, the possibility of them drafting Sanders. That was a point where they lost two additional defensive linemen off the board. One of them was Farmer, and I'm forgetting who the other one was. Mm. But they had two guys from the defensive line that they lost out on that point. I'm personally happy with the left tackle. And one of the nice things about this draft is the Ravens don't have an offensive tackle need, which is a really comfortable position to be in. They could trade a pick where the target is obviously going to be a left tackle to another team, particularly Freeling, who is, you know, one of the only decent LT prospects in this whole draft, is a guy that they could, potentially trade away the rights to at 14.
Yeah. And how many years ago, you know, we talked about this a little bit on the first show about having done at least one draft show together during one of the picks. How many years have, both of us, when are they going to take an actual tackle? No more of these combo hybrid guys. Yep. Can we get an actual tackle? And like you said, by all accounts, you know, Vinson, you know, projects to be that type of player. So yeah, that was a pick that, honestly, I wasn't super familiar with him as a player, got more familiar. And then, you know, the season, like you said, it went about as well as it could go from a developmental standpoint.
Yeah. Very, very excited with the way it went. And I don't think there's any question that he's on the game day roster week after week this coming season based on where the Ravens are. Now, I know they could draft one of the big tackle guard guys who would then take, you know, as a swing player would take that spot essentially from him. But I don't really see that happening. I see Vincent being a regular game day activation, and I think we'll get to see him play some this year. Let's move on. Your number six guy is on the board. We have not heard his name yet, right?
No, we have not. I don't believe. All right. So my number six guy is Chris McClellan from University of Missouri. A guy who I think I started watching their edge player, Zion Young.
Yep.
And then your eye sort of gets drawn right to other jersey numbers. You don't necessarily know the names, but you see a number and it kind of flashes and you're like, who's that? And make a note to yourself to kind of go back and look that person up and maybe watch them a little bit more. So I'm watching Zion Young, but I'm kind of keeping one eye on this defensive tackle. And I'm like, all right, who's this guy over here making these plays? This number seven. But for me, you know, he's a guy who played long in the run game, right? He strike and lock out on blocks. You know, you like to see that. From your defensive lineman. He was stout at the point of attack. You know, we talked about in the previous show some of these guys who were maybe a little bit more undersized, a little bit more sort of pass rush three technique sort of style. This guy, you know, was a little bit harder to move, you know, in the run game, even with combo and double team blocks. You know, he was able to kind of hold that point of attack a little bit more stoutly. Decent get off as a rusher. You know, we're not talking about David Bailey level of get off here as rush, but in terms of edge player, but you know, good get off, I thought. Showed that he had the ability to flip his hips and get square to the QB. Sometimes, you know, when they're rushing upfield from the interior and you get that little bit of crease and you get that little bit of space, and you've got to get skinny through that gap and then kind of flip your hips and get turned to the quarterback again. Mm-hmm. Somewhat similar to what you see with edge players when they've got a corner, but obviously the angles are much different inside and the time and the space is different. But, you know, the ability to have the hips to do that as a bigger defensive tackle body is something that I look for. Thought he had a pretty effective arm over move in terms of a pass rush. Not a deep repertoire of pass rush moves, but that was one that he kind of knew when to use it and how to use it. Sometimes you can get a little high on that, right? Your pad level can come up as you're trying to do that arm over swim and you open up your rib cage. And I think he was a little bit more aware. I think he had some awareness of that. So it was really tight, really quick, you know, and still trying to keep his pad level down as much as he could. Think he can play a little upright at times. Speaking about pad level, there's times where it kind of pops up and down and you're like, hey, if we can just see a little bit more consistency, you've shown me you can keep it down at times. I just, you know, like to see you do that a little bit more consistently. So I think that for me, sometimes that can cause a little bit of a struggle to change direction when you get high like that, because now your center of gravity is elevated and it's a little bit harder to change direction subtly with, you know, reacting to ball carriers when your center of gravity gets elevated like that. If you're able to stay low, you're a little bit, you know, better positioned to react quickly this way or, you know, to your left or to your right or whatever. So I'd like to see him do that. Actually, I won't. Okay, never mind. I won't go off on this tangent. There was a real interesting thing I saw just recently about pad level and how it's more about force into the ground than it is about the actual level of your pads. Like people say, okay, you know, you got to keep your hips down,
force,
whatever.
Force into the ground. Explain that.
Yeah. All right, I'll do my best. It was a Substack post that I was reading from LaCharles Bentley. I don't know if people, okay. You know.
Sure.
I think a lot of people know about Duke Manyweather. It's kind of one of these O-line trainers, but LaCharles Bentley is a guy who's also been doing O-line it for a long school. Time.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think they used to work together at one point, and then kind of Duke split off and started his own program, which has been very successful, obviously. But yeah, LaCharles had this Substack post recently about how it's how you – are placing that force into the ground that determines your pad level. His argument was pad level is a result of how you apply force to the ground. It's not the other way around, right? He's like, a lot of people, you know, are looking at pad level in a vacuum. And he's like, no, it's about how those initial steps that you're taking and how you're applying that force into the ground with those steps is what determines your pad level. He gets way more technical than I do. Obviously, I'm not a pass rush, you know, an O-line trainer, haven't played in the NFL. I believe he played with the Saints, right? I think he was a center.
Yeah, It might play with the Browns too. If you have a link to that, I'd love to get into it. And does it get into any of the physics of it actually, or is it more of a narrative physics?
A little more narrative, because it's a short post. Right. Okay. It's not a real long one. It's probably, I don't know, four or five paragraphs, and not long paragraphs. So it's pretty short. So yeah, I think it's more narrative, but it was just an interesting approach to that discussion than what I'd heard before. Cause typically you'll hear about pads, your pads are too high. And then kind of the next iteration of that that I heard was it's not pad level, it's hip level. Right.
Okay.
The higher or lower your hips are, that's what determines. Because you know, there was somebody I was watching. It was in a coaching clinic, and he was kind of just doing this visual demonstration of like, "Hey, I can lower my pads. Watch this." And I hunch over, like, "Hey, now my pads are lowered." And he's like, "I'm still not in a good football position, right? It's about lowering your hips, right? Low." And they talk about low man wins, and I think it was I'm blanking on his name now too, but he used to play for the Browns and Mitchell Schwartz. Who's on Twitter a lot. He was a right tackle for the Browns and the Chiefs for a lot of years. He talked about that when he says, it's not a low man win, it's low hips, right? It's all about getting your hips down, and that's how you create that leverage. So sorry, I didn't mean to go off on that tangent, but when I was thinking about this pad level thing with Chris McClellan, popped into my head, and I was like, that's kind of interesting. I need to go back and reread that. But yeah, I liked McClellan a lot. I think him and Zion Young kind of had this sort of thematic thing in common, just lunch pail guys, physical, hardworking. Now Zion Young also, I think, tested pretty well, so good athlete. But just physical, hard hat, aggressive. Gonna be a long day trying to deal with these guys in the trenches, kinds of guys. And I found myself gravitating more towards those players, particularly at edge this year. I feel like they maybe were chasing something a little bit different with edge in the past. When you think about Owe, when you think about Ojabo, maybe a little bit more athleticism, maybe a little bit more twitch, as compared to the Za'Darius Smiths, the Matt Judons, these bigger body types. Not that they were bad athletes. Certainly Za'Darius was not a bad athlete, but just a little bit of a bigger body type, a little bit more physical. So this year I found myself, particularly at edge, gravitating towards the Zion Youngs, the TJ Parkers, those kinds of guys. So this is my own journey, and how I've looked at some of these players this year. Because I did kind of get off on this bendy, quick, fast, kind of guys out on the edge. And I'm like, when they've been at their best defensively, they've had those kinds of guys, or at least one guy like that on one side of the formation. And maybe you do got a guy who's a little bit more of a pass rusher on the other side. But anyway, another tangent. See, I avoided a lot of these tangents in the first show.
You did a great job. but I really wanted to hear both of these. I mean, the tangent the thing that I typically get into every year, and particularly when the Ravens need somebody to play on the side of the tight end, basically they need a Sam linebacker at that outside, at that edge spot. I do look at, what projectability do those players have for Sam characteristics? And it's just a lot of players who don't fit that mold typically in most drafts, or they might fit that mold, but they've had like 28 career college coverage snaps because their teams needed them as pass rushers. Mm-hmm. And, they were good at that. This year, there's a ton of guys who have like 100 plus career coverage snaps and have looked moderately to particularly good at it. It's, again, an early down Sam is something the Ravens need. So, yeah, we all have our things that we're looking for in terms of ability. But I would love to have some pass rush flexibility created by that if we could. Let me go back to McClellan. He's on my honorable mention group. He did not make my top 10. I think he'd be about a fifth round value for the Ravens. Here were my things that I liked about him, didn't like about him. I didn't like his testing at all. Obviously, he's got big hands and 34-inch arms. That's great. Those are measurables. The testing, 5:05 40 is probably not, it's not great for a three tech, certainly. 25 bench reps is okay. It's not fantastic. It's not terrible for a defensive lineman. You factor in the 34-inch arms, it's probably a slight plus. He had an 8.18 three cone and a 5.00 shuttle. So the lateral quickness is a real problem there. I think that's why I really project him to nose at the NFL instead of three tech. Now that may be unfair. It may be that, he's a swan and I'm treating him like a duck or a chicken or whatever it is that he, but I think he ends up there. Great stops in his tackle rate career, 9.0 is 9.0 this year, and it's 9.0 for his career. So that's a fantastic relationship there. A career 6.7% missed tackle rate. He's played 53% pass snaps in his career, which really means he's been an early down specialist so far. So they haven't really tried to develop him as a situational pass rusher in any way. I thought length and first step are some positives. He has a good mix of bull rush, and he has some half man moves, which normally I would associate with being a three tech. I just thought his testing was otherwise wasn't getting it done. Pretty solid patrolling two gaps with length. Don't know how you feel about that. I looked at him and said his arms are not that well defined. Mm-hmm. Now, it's okay for a 22-year-old, I guess. He's going to be 23 in October, as I have it. But he's a guy who definitely will come into the NFL and have weight room work to catch up strength-wise with other players around him. He's a guy, like, he's one of the guys I say does not really have a high motor. And normally I won't say that about a player. You know, you pick out the guys who do. If you don't say it, doesn't necessarily mean it. But he has this short burst of energy he expends on plays, and then he kind of jogs after the play. But he's not a guy you constantly see pursuing the play, you know, getting to the quarterback after a five-second pocket, you know, running downfield to make a tackle, that kind of thing. So I think he could go as early as round four potentially to someone. I think the Ravens won't find him kind of a value need proposition that they put that early. If they got him in round six, I'd be very excited. If they got him in round five, I'd be happy. But, you know, I don't have as high a grade on him as some other people do.
Yeah, he's another guy where I think the range might kind of be all over the place a little bit. Yeah, because
let me look for that.
Dane's got a third, fourth on him. So kind of all over. Now, interesting, too, he doesn't have any short shuttle or three cone testing on him. He chose not to do it at the combine, and he said he didn't do it at his pro day. So he doesn't have any numbers other than the 40, the vertical jump, the broad, and that's it.
Both listed as pro day measurements. So yeah, 5.0 OP and a three cone is an 818P.
Yeah. So he's got a DNP across the board for pro day for Chris McClellan.
Interesting.
So who knows? Other interesting note though about him, and I meant to talk about this more with the other guys that we've talked about, because I think it's an important factor, right? We talk about injuries, but what about guys who haven't missed games,
right,
due to injuries? This guy played all 51 games in the past four seasons. So, you know, old school coaches will say, you know, your best ability is availability. And so, you know, particularly at that position, you know, the fact that he's been durable in that way is a good sign.
Yeah, I'm with you there. So we will continue on. I had Lee Hunter at number six. That was your number six you just mentioned, right? Was McClellan?
It was McClellan, yep.
Right. So who's your number five guy?
All right, we're moving on. Number five for me is Caleb Banks, University of Florida, who a little bit of an enigma for me because, you know, 2025, I think he had the injury actually going back to the offseason before the start of the 2025 season. I think he might have hurt his foot in spring ball or something like that. And he played for the first two games of 2025. He re-injured it. I think it was against LSU. I think that was their second game. So then he sits out, and then he comes back for like the last two games. Very admirable, right? I don't want to ding him on that at all. I mean, because he didn't have to do that, right? Somebody who's deciding to come out in the draft, he could have just shut it down completely and just said, hey, let me just 100% lock in the draft training. But he actually came back and played and said that it was important for him to do that. So he's one of those kind of guys. By all accounts, again, I'm reading other people's work. I have not talked to Caleb Banks or anybody who knows Caleb Banks. By all accounts, high character kind of guy. But because you didn't get to see as much from him this year, you can go back to 2024, which I did, and you can look at previous seasons, and you see some pretty impressive things. I think most of my notes are actually based on 2024 because we didn't have as much to look at for 2025. Although he was at the Senior Bowl, and I think he definitely, you know, flashed a little bit there. But let's see my notes. Yeah, again, they're pretty limited here. So I talked about his first step quickness. You know, for a guy with that size, again, another big. Was he 6'6"? I think
6'6", 330.
So, you know, that's you just don't see that. I mean, you see big guys on the interior in the NFL in terms of weight, but you don't always see the weight and height combo. So, you know, that makes him sort of unique in that way. Thought he was able to win with quickness and penetrate, but then he didn't finish plays in the backfield as much for me as I wanted him to. And I felt like his plan was a little bit inconsistent, his pass rush plan, when he didn't win with his first move. I thought he was sort of locked into this first move. And if he didn't win with that, you'd see guys kind of be able to latch on to him. And you had a little bit of the Velcro deal going on in terms of getting stuck to blockers at times. But I think you definitely see that first step quickness, like I talked about, that ability to penetrate, sort of that game wrecking type of potential. You saw flashes of that, I think, even in 2025. Of course, you saw more of it in 2024 when he was able to play throughout the year. But even in 2025, I think you saw flashes of it. And then, you know, like I mentioned earlier, at the Senior Bowl, he was a handful. He was an absolute handful in one-on-ones. He made some plays in the game. And so he's, for me, I don't like boom or bust. I just don't like to use that label. But it's sort of in that category for me with him, because even in 2024, when he was healthy, you just didn't see those upside flashes that he did put on tape as consistently as I would have liked to see them. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the enigma, the unknown part for me is, can he put that together in a consistent kind of way? Cause then I think you've got something. I think you've got a player if you can do that. But I just don't know. You can tell with the pauses and the hesitation that he was a tricky one for me.
So, you know, he's duplicative of some things for the Ravens. I have him at number three overall, and there's a whole bunch of negatives. But one of the things I like is that I think there are some glaring holes which can be corrected that would improve his stock. Now, on the other side of that, he'll be 25 in December. Mm-hmm. So that's a big concern for me. Does have huge hands, big everything, but 10.875 inch hands is one of the biggest among this group. There was an 11 inch hands guy too. Stops to miss tackles are where he completely falls down. He's got a 1.6 career ratio between those two, and that's fueled by a 25.5% career miss tackle rate. Unbelievable. It's about three times what it should be for a defensive lineman. He's got that medical flag you talked about. I don't want to go into that anymore. I do think he's a plus first step. Extremely raw despite the age, stands up too much, has not learned how to play low, and that's one big area of potential improvement. If you can teach that guy to change his approach and he doesn't lose that first step ability that makes him kind of a special prospect, then maybe he can be a play low guy at the NFL who ends up being a lot better than he was in college. I think his close is very nice in the backfield on the ball carrier. Doesn't always bring the guy down, but I thought that he's quick closing on the ball for a big man. And the guy that I really associate that with, if you go back to the 2000 Ravens, is Sam Adams. Mm-hmm. Sam Adams had incredible closing burst to get to the ball carrier. He definitely has not learned to set his feet properly. That's another place for improvement. Now, he's big, so corkscrew moves and things where he has to get really low to the ground may not work for him in the way they would work for other, you know, frankly, smaller three techs or more compact three techs or noses in terms of accepting a double team block. But that said, he's got to spend extra work figuring out how to get his 2 feet at the proper angle. Now, I go to camp, obviously, and one of the things I see is defensive linemen working on this all day. And in particular, the nose tackles, defensive line as a group, will sit there and they'll practice how you set against double team blocks to continue to deny that space. And you see the angle of the feet that they're working with. Great drill to watch, by the way. I can't imagine Caleb Banks has had He's probably had the coaching, because I can't imagine you'd avoid that coaching. I don't think the Ravens are special at teaching it. But on the other hand, I don't think he's taking it to the playing field with him. And that's a place that's a angle. And this, again, you can look at that as a negative, or you can look at that as a place where he could improve. And with good coaching, he could get to a different level. So a whole bunch of things I like. Guards had a lot of difficulty with him one-on-one. He doesn't always get to rush against a guard, but they have a lot of difficulty. He has a spin move he pulls out on special occasions, which I like to see something in the toolkit for an interior defender. Here's what I didn't see, and I really wanted to. He's got 35-inch arms. I was expecting to see a bunch of push-pull moves. Mm-hmm. Now, remember, McCary and Linderbaum and Voorhees are all guys who got pulled off their feet a fair amount for the Ravens, and it's because they have to overcommit due to a lack of length. So I was hoping to see that. I didn't really see a lot of that in his game. Did you notice that in any of the film you watched?
Yeah, it wasn't something that, again, so much of what I have down in my notes were flashes. You might see him do it one play, right, where he kind of punches, locks out a guy, and then tears off and, like, throws that guy to the side. You can see it once, and then you're like, okay, I didn't see this anymore. So, you know, it's – and I wonder some of that, too. I wonder if it's – so he was a transfer, like so many of these guys, right? He started out at Louisville, and he transferred to Florida. So he's played 24 games. He's started 24 games. He's played 35 games across those five seasons. Now, he redshirted his first year, so you're not going to hold that against him. I think he was in two games before he redshirted, but then only six games in 2022, and then he picked it up in 23 and 24, you know, 12 games, and he got hurt last year, three games. So, you know, you do wonder if some of that is lack of practice time. You know, I heard Julian Edelman make this point on a podcast where he talked about when you were coming back from injuries. He's like, you're trying to get back to zero, right? You're trying to get back to a baseline when you're coming back from injury. When you've had a healthy offseason and you're coming into the next season, you're building, right? I've established something. I'm not at zero. I'm not at baseline. I have something I can build on now. But he's like, when you're trying to get back from an injury, you're trying to get back to that baseline. And so that sort of compounding effect, you lose it during that year that you're trying to recover from an injury.
Kind of the concept I would talk about in baseball or football in terms of failing forward, that, you know, any play is good in terms of what you can learn from it and doing that. And the Ravens have had these developmental year losses from Ajabo, from Voorhees, from Emory Jones last year, that I think have really cost these players more than it was true. I completely agree with the Edelman comment.
Yeah. You're just trying to get back to a starting point, let alone, hey, here are all the things that I learned, like you took Carson Benson on the other end of the spectrum. Here are all the things that I've learned, skills that I've gained, and now going into my second year, I've already got those filed away, and I can build on that, and I can leverage those things. These other guys, they've got to establish those things. They didn't get the opportunity to develop those things the way that other guys do.
With you all the way. Okay, so you have Banks at five. I have him at three. Where did Dane have him, by the way? Where's he put him?
Dane actually had a pretty good grade on Banks. He has him as his fourth defensive tackle, 52 overall, and a second and third round grade on him.
Yeah, second round grade it sounds about right. Okay, I'll jump in. My number five guy is Grayson Halton of Oklahoma. 6'3", 293, another guy, you know, in the smaller three tech group here, but a 482 40, great vert, good broad jumps. He's that's kind of confirmed in terms of some of the get off I observed. 25 bench reps. That 25 bench reps is not as good as the 25 bench reps for the 34 inch arms. He had 31 and an eighth inch arms, so he's very challenged in that area. But he had a 479 shuttle, an 809 three cone is such an outlier to all the rest of his testing. It's terrible. Whereas most of his other testing is quite good. And he just turned 22 in January. So a lot of the defensive linemen, you figure them to be 23 at some point this year because of the typical either hold back in eighth grade or other things. Sometimes they play 5 years, but the four-year guys oftentimes are 23 anyway when they come out of school. When you think about that, that means they're really 19 when they're finishing high school. And so but it is what I normally expect. And it's normally, you know, for developmental purposes, they hold them back a year at some point, either during eighth grade or at some point during high school. Stops to missed tackles are just okay. 4.8, 5.4 career, 10.7 missed tackle rate. He's played mostly pass snaps in his career. So they're really using him for that at Oklahoma. His run defense has been okay, but his pass rush was really outstanding the last couple seasons, 8.5 sacks, 2 passes defense in the SEC, and had only a 15% close rate. I'm defining that as sacks plus quarterback hits divided by total pressures. And I use the contributions on PFF for that to get to a single number, but a close rate of 15% is not particularly good. That's low. Most of the edges, the good edges are up in the 40s. The pretty good edges are at 30, 32 kind of thing. So it's even for defensive tackle, I don't consider that particularly good. Really uses penetration and half man moves right off the line. He's not a bull rush guy like many of the defensive tackles. Violent with the quarterback when he does get that opportunity. He's got a great close when he's the initial pressure. So he has lots of fast penetrating pressures. That is something in a three tech. If you can get that, you're really getting something. Nose tackle, you get a lot of bull rush, pocket amoeba, pocket morphing to try and get the quarterback off his spot and someone else has to finish. When you get a fast pressure with a three tech in the face of the quarterback, that's a really nice thing. I think he'd be a great over and under guy on stunts. And he had a significant number of twists and stunts that were on the tape from Oklahoma. So that's something to look for if you want to do that. I think he's a potential three tech partner for Matt Abike if he does not return. And I think he's a guy who the Ravens would certainly hope would wreak havoc on single blocks. I like him a lot. I think he'd be a real value pick at 115. He'd be only a mild reach at number 80. And remember, he's just fifth on my list. So we haven't really gotten to the top. But the fact that number 80 is the fifth defensive lineman is probably, again, indicative of the class, that that's not a really a great group.
Yeah, I had a lot of similar notes watching him too. He is that pass rushing, athletic interior defensive lineman, yep. Right? Who wants to win. You think about a Jim Schwartz defense, right? The guys who are just jetting up the field. We're not reading. There's no reading taking place here. We're getting up the field right now. We're attacking, and we'll play the run on the way to the quarterback. I think he would really thrive in a system like that. Not to say that he couldn't thrive in a Ravens system, because I think he could as well, because, again, you talked about his ability in line movement, right? So a system that uses a lot of defensive line movement, I think he would thrive in a system like that too. So as long as, you know, you understand that, okay, this is probably not a guy that you necessarily want to have out there on primary rundowns, right? It's going to be more in kind of known pass rush situations. You know, could he develop, you know, into a better run defender? Not that he's a bad run defender, but if you're going to play him on the interior, he's going to have to defend the run a certain way, right? He's not going to be one of these guys who are going to be stout against combos and doubles. And, you know, if he's somebody who's going to play a lot of snaps for you, that's going to be game planned against, right? This is one of the big differences, right? When you come from college into the NFL, is like teams are going to find the Where's Waldo guy. And they're going to say, this is the guy that we're going to combo. We're going to combo this guy all day, and we're going to make the other guy, you know, face single blocks and see if he can make some plays. So, you know, he's just going to have to do it. And you see it a lot with these undersized defensive linemen. They're not going to just stand there and just like take on, you know, four hands, you know, 600 pounds, you know, coming at them with two blockers, but they're going to win with quickness. They're going to win with athleticism. They're going to win with agility. And that's just how they're going to have to do it. And that's going to be hit or miss at this level, because these guys in the NFL on the offensive line are extremely technically sound for the most part. So, right. You know, they've seen these things that you're bringing to the table. But I liked him a lot too. I didn't have him in my top 10. I actually had him at 11, and I struggle with that. That is usually the last two or three spots of these lists that I have the hardest time with, because I'm like, I want to include this guy, but I kind of always want to have this other guy too. But he was right there, and it could have gone either way. I could have bumped Caleb Proctor off and had him at number 10 very easily.
So that's interesting, because we've had two major differences right now. And a good segue to get into some honorable mention guys before we move to the top four, who I would bet are probably the same. But you had Halton off your list, and I had Halton all the way at number 5, and I had McClellan off my list, and you had him at number 6, right?
Yes.
6. So those were our major differences so far. Otherwise, we've got a lot of duplication of names. Rashawn Berry, I had at 8. Did you have him on your list at all, or is he an honorable mention?
He's 12. 12. Me. Yeah, he's okay. He's another honorable mention guy who, I got a couple. Landon Robinson was in that list. Nick Barrett, Albert Regis, Zane Durant, Bryson Eason, the Godfather, Dante.
He's number 14 on my list. Yeah.
DeMonte Capehart, Clemson. Yeah. So I got a couple guys who are kind of right there.
I have DeMonte Capehart at 12, Dante Corleone at 14. Big Citrus, Dominique Orange. I really do not like his game. The more I looked at it, I'm not all that fun.
Quite surprised at where I have him.
Still to come, huh?
Okay. Yeah.
So, Let me not blow the thing, because there's another guy I have on the list who might or might not still be there for you. So go ahead with your number four guy.
Number four guy for me, and here's another one of those. Could go either way. Peter Woods from Clemson is a guy. I mean, if you were to look at him and just set aside the testing and the measurables for a second, if you were to watch his tape, primarily from last year, really even his freshman season, that's probably even better. Go back to his freshman season, and you would say, this is probably a top 10 type of pick, right? If you were to go back and watch that freshman season, just the athleticism from somebody who is, what is he, right around 6'1", 6'2", low 300 pounds, I think, to be able to move that kind of first step quickness, but also some real violence in his game too. And just, it wasn't as bad in 2024, but 2025, and I think this is probably true for Clemson across the board, it just was a down year. A down season in 2025. And they've got guys on defense, right? Peter Woods, CJ Parker, Avion Terrell. There's other guys who are going to get drafted, probably within the top 100 picks in this draft. So it's not like, you know, hey, well, the talent level really fell off. No, they had guys, but for whatever reason, it just didn't come together. But anyway, Peter Woods for me, and I guess because I remember him popping on my radar as a freshman. And I was talking to Chris and Kerry, and I'm watching, I'm like, who is this guy? Who is this number 11? Because they were using him a little bit more up and down the line. Then he would even play like some five technique and kind of line up on the edge of the defensive line as a freshman. And, you know, this year, I think he's pretty primarily an interior guy. I don't think you saw him on the edge as my, when I say edge, I'm five technique. We're not talking about like a stand up outside linebacker. That's not what I mean by edge, but just outside edge of the tackle, right, is where he would line up sometimes as a freshman and win. You know, from that alignment, because he had the athleticism to do it. And that was
a five in base or a five in passing situations.
I guess it probably could have been either, but they were primarily a four down line. So, outside shoulder of the tackle.
Okay.
You know, pretty much not like wide, not like real wide, like a seven or a nine, like somebody that would be outside of a tight end or even, you know, that real wide, not anything like that.
4-3 end though, as opposed to
essentially, there you go.
Yeah. Okay.
There you go. That's a better description. Yeah. Basically a 4-3 end, which again, for a 6'2", 300 pound guy, didn't necessarily expect to see him out there like that, but sure. You know, they felt like he had the athleticism to do it. And he really kind of did. He really kind of showed that freshman season. I don't think that athleticism went away. But he's really hard for me to pin down, well, what changed? Where did this potential that was so intriguing go? Because I've got probably the most notes of any of the guys that I watched on him, right? First step quickness, violent block shedder, but doesn't consistently finish, right? A lot of miss, a lot of almost plays in 2025. Natural leverage to strike blockers and knock them back. I didn't know what his arm length was at the time, but he seemed to.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
You know, have some struggles with being able to reach ball carriers. Like he'd be in position. It's not like one of these things where they're not anywhere even close to you to be able to reach him. Like you could literally reach out and touch this guy, but you weren't able to do it for whatever reason. Felt like he got washed out of his gap more often than you expect based on his talent level, not necessarily his mass, because he's not a huge, huge guy in the interior, but based on his talent level. Athletic, but plays out of control at times, showed a lack of discipline in terms of gap integrity. There were times where I thought he was just out there kind of doing his own thing. jog to the ball a little too often for me, just assuming the play was already over. This is all 2025 stuff, by the way, because I don't think you saw as much of this in 23 and 24. Effective on games due to foot quickness and agility. I thought, in a nutshell, he was more effective as a pass rusher the wider he aligned, because then he was able to use his athleticism. Give him more space. We're not talking about, again, edge. We're not talking about, you know, seven technique, wide nine or anything like that. We're talking about on the interior of the offensive line. If he can be a three or a wide three, and we're getting into the nuance now, right? Because then you're talking about
four eye.
So the just more width, create a little bit more space in there. He's able to lean on his calling card, which is athleticism and quickness for a guy his size. So where all of that went, I think it's still in there. I don't think it's gone. But why it didn't show up the same way in 2025 that it did in previous seasons, I don't know. I genuinely don't know. He was a real mystery for me. Like, what changed?
That is a thoroughly scathing report there. And he is my number one guy. I don't want him at 14. I don't even really want him in a four-pick trade back at number 18. But he's my number one guy on the defensive line. Again, I'll go through what I had, because you talked about the athleticism. I actually thought his testing was pretty darn terrible. He did have, other than the 475, and the 475 is jaundiced eye other reading. Okay. You know, for that. Short arms. He has reported, I don't know if he's on the freaks list or whatever, but a 490-pound bench and a 700 squat are claimed for him. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Terrible tackler career. 17.8% career missed tackle rate and a 3.5 to 1 stops to miss tackle ratio, which has been very consistent throughout his career. He's played 60% pass snaps. They're already using him in the role I would project him to at the NFL, which is really more of a pass rush specialist, three tech, who will play some, but not too many downs. But like Matabike, honestly, in terms of you don't want to waste his snaps on early downs, and the Ravens ended up doing a lot of that anyway, but you want to have him on there for certain with Travis Jones in a passing down. Very fast out of his stance, quickly penetrates, nice big half man swipe move that he uses. He's a shed then chase guy, and you've heard me talk about bull then shed or shed then chase guys. He tries to win at the line of scrimmage, gets by his opponent. By the way, another guy who will be absolutely fantastic in the NFL, I would project as a stunt under guy based on the quickness he's got off the snaps. He's got the quickness to be an over too, by the way, but he's got the power to be an under. He worked a lot with Capehart on such twists at Clemson, and they're a really good tandem. Travis Jones is a whole nother level in terms of a player who can make that help and make the other player looks good. And I think that, you know, Woods is a guy who could make Travis Jones look good as an under player, and I think they could do it vice versa as well. Yeah, I thought one of the things I saw in the Clemson games was that Woods would disappear for stretches. Now, it happens with every player. You're watching a tape of every play. You expect him to make more plays, even if you're going pretty quickly through the tape. He's just not involved in that many total plays. And so, you know, that's a you know, something of a concern. There are other players who just make their physically presence known more frequently than Peter Woods does. Part of that is probably the fact that because he's on passing downs, even when he's trying to penetrate and get in the backfield, if he's on a kind of a cold rush of pass rushers or the guard has him kind of figured out, then it'll be a little bit of trouble. Not really a guy who has the proper length for two gapping. Certainly that's a very legitimate problem. And I understand, I wouldn't be expecting this guy to come in and be a run blocker. I'm expecting to be Travis Jones running mate on obvious passing downs. That's what I want. He's the best three tech in the draft for what the Ravens need and want in this case. And there's only a couple of guys. We've talked about him here in the last couple, and maybe we got one more to go who has that combination, you know, as the three tech pass rush twitch that I want to go with Travis Jones and be the running mate. Otherwise, you know, the nose tackles that potentially could do it are not that exciting. I talked about being agnostic on the first show to a nose tackle or a three tech pick. And yet I'm not seeing a lot of nose tackles who bring the pass rush juice that you'd hope to pair with Travis Jones and make something better. So Woods, I think fits very well with Travis Jones for this. And again, my number one guy, I hope I'm not falling into groupthink patterns in terms of doing this, because I'm trying to project how he'll play for the Ravens And I understand if people are going to differ on that.
No, I don't think that you are, because again, he is, I think Dane has him as his number two defensive tackle. So he's very high on him too. And look, despite, you know, you listen to those notes, you're like, wow, this guy really, really hates Peter Woods. He's my number four guy. I don't hate him.
Right,
just,
sure.
Yeah. I just, you know,
you have a second round grade on him then, really?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, well, yeah, Dane might even been first, last, second, but yeah, I probably second for me. But I think this is again, just personal, you know, so a little bit peek behind the curtain when I do this stuff. I know, and it's something I try to be aware of when I'm writing notes up, or even back when I was doing full reports on these guys. I know that when I've seen somebody flash or early and I'm like really impressed and they catch my eye in terms of their talent, I'm harder on them than I am on other players. I know that about myself. That's not fair. You shouldn't do that, right? This is supposed to be as unbiased as you can make it. But because I saw that 2023 freshman All-American season and I saw some of the things in 2024, when I saw 2025, I was just like, what has happened? So yeah, I was probably a little harder on him than I would have been in a vacuum, probably. And I know that that's something, you know, an area for me to always try to continue to be aware about, like, hey, let's not do that, right? Let's give these guys all the same opportunity. But yeah, not a person that I dislike. Like I said, he's my number four. He's your number one. He was Dane's number two. So, you know, he's highly thought of. It's just, you know, a little bit of trying to figure out, you know, why was there a little bit of a drop off in 2025?
What you're saying is like reminiscent of how I felt about Starks last year. Okay. Is that I thought he was a second round pick. He'd have been a good value there, maybe even very late in the first round. Now, really, I didn't like him as first round pick. That's what it really came down to. And I, you know, I felt so alone on an island out there, given the other national pundits and how the groupthink was all trending in that direction. I'm not going to worry about it in the future. I do not give a crap. And so if you've got him at fourth, that's great. You think he's a second round player, and I say he's a late first round player. It's really not that much of a difference. We're going to be happy to get that guy. We're going to be thrilled to get that guy if we get him in the second round. We're probably both going to be thrilled. And you're going to be, hopefully you're not going to be totally disappointed if you get him at in the mid 20s by some sort of trade back, probably two trade backs, frankly, and pick up two third round picks and Peter Woods is your first round all of a sudden. That doesn't sound like a bad draft either.
Nope. Not at all. No, and you know, I think it's good to have these differences and these disagreements. I was just having this conversation with James Ogden yesterday because we were talking about a player and we were different on him. And he's like, maybe I'm too low. Maybe I'm being too hard because, you know, I liked it a little bit more. And I was like, no, this is what this is supposed to be about. We're supposed to bring these different perspectives because that's how all of us grow from this process, is by hearing a different perspective. And you know, to be able to have the discussion and talk about why I see this player that way and you see him another way, and then still walk away from that and not, you know, it doesn't turn into these fights where you're trying to convince somebody that they're wrong on the player, right? That's not what we're trying to do. You're sharing your perspective. I'm sharing my perspective. They're different. What I try to do, I did this in that conversation with James, and I'll do it now because I've been jotting some things down as we've been talking. When people point out things that are different than the perspective that I have, I go back and rewatch. I'm like, hey, let me look for this thing that they mentioned, because I didn't have this and maybe I missed it. So that's, to me, what the process should be ideally is, yeah, we're going to disagree and that's fine. It shouldn't necessarily change our minds. It should encourage growth so that we're all, you know, kind of looking at things from a perspective that's not just our own. I mean, what's the fun in that?
And that's, there's a problem in general with the internet tough guys. Well, it can be on Reddit, it could be on Twitter, it could be a lot of different places. I personally find the Reddit community for the Ravens to be extremely respectful you know, they talk nice to each other. It's a little silly sometimes, but it's a group of people that really seems to understand football. On Twitter, I just find that there's a lot of vitriol that comes out. I think some people are just a different person on Twitter than they are in real life. I mean, there's people I know who are internet tough guys on Twitter that I don't like to see that. Yeah. I mean,
it's a shame.
Anyway, yeah,
it's a shame. But yeah, I welcome the difference and the disagreement. I think it's a good thing.
All right, my friend. We're on to my number four guy, aren't we? Or did you? Yeah. Okay. Yep. So that's Kristen Miller of Georgia. Let's get the show going again now that we just had a half hour on Peter Woods here. I'll get down
to so, we did so good in the first show. We were so good.
We did good. 6'4", 321, 33 inch arms, a 490. Again, that's an other measurement. Didn't have any other testing. He'll turn 22 in August. Did not have a particularly good missed tackle rate career at 12.5%. And he's only played 53% pass snaps. So at Georgia, he was really an early down guy for them. Three tech primarily, does have experience of the nose. I think at his size, he's probably an NFL three tech if that 490 really holds up. That's enough quickness that he could get by at the three tech. And I'll get into some other things, other reasons why I think it might happen. He has knocked down only one pass in 566 career pass rush snaps. Not particularly good. He's versus the run, definitely a stack then shed guy. Works down the line very effectively. I think he mirrors on zone plays pretty well. And keeps his hands on the player and then and penetrates when it's necessary. Got a really high pursuit motor even when he's blocked. So you'll see plays where somebody's on his shoulder. He's still pursuing to the play. He's not trying to disengage actively from that guy. Does not seem to have really top grip strength for tackling. And that may be a function of a hand size, which I don't have a hand size on him. But that's sometimes a problem. I think he collapsed the pocket effectively with the bull rush. He has some quickness for the over and under on twist. That's critical for a three tech, and in particular a three tech that the Ravens get. I want to see a guy who has that characteristic. Denies space with effort by collapsing interior offensive line on each other. Okay, so this is a key point. And this is usually only a run defense point that I make, but I really like it when a player can squeeze from his gap to the active gap, the gap the running back has taken, when he can squeeze his offensive lineman into that gap to deny space. It's not always something that's easy to do, but that's what a lot of run defense is just denying space and trying to get the best possible angle you can on that and create the least possible lane, at least that will have that running back negotiating traffic at the very least. One thing that I a little bit down on for, I think he really just is average quickness out of his stance. He's a bit of a project three technique, but he's young, and I think he fits the Ravens' needs more than the other nose tackles in this draft. So I thought he's a guy that I like more than a lot of the others. Anyway, number four on my list, and I have a second round grade on him.
One of my favorites as well. Dane has the hand measurements for him, and again, you're going to see this throughout, like these different numbers at the combine versus the pro day. We just can't seem to measure things the same. 10 inch at the combine, 9 7/8 at pro day. So still good size either way. Same thing with now his arms, they got those 33 33 as his wingspan. Okay. One was 80 1/8, one was 80 3/4. As you look through it, it's interesting how many times that happened, because he has both usually, and it's just like what's going on here.
I don't know if you've looked at Cole Wisniewski, the safety out of Texas, he played last year at Texas, right? Yeah, Texas Tech.
I think it was Texas Tech.
Yeah, you're right. It's Texas Tech. And he played 4 years at North Dakota State before that. Mm-hmm. The arm measurement for him was 34. And that literally, I mean, that he's a Kyle Hamilton clone all of a sudden. He's got this humongous wingspan. He's a tall guy, weighs 220. You know, you're thinking that this is a guy who could play a star role. There's another arm length measurement of 31 and change on him, like 31.5, 31.375. You know, what? Is this the same guy? You know, did somebody else take the SAT for this guy and they had an arm length measurement built into it?
it's wild. These, whether it's measurements, whether it's testing numbers, the range of stuff that is out there on the internet, it never ceases to amaze me. I'll have to go look his up in the beast and see what Dane had for him. But yeah, no, I'm big fan of, Kristen Miller, posted some clips on Twitter. People probably know that I'm a big fan of his. I guess I'll spoil it a little bit. I mean, I actually have him as my number two player, so he's way up there.
Oh, wow.
For me. But yeah, I echo a lot of things that you say. And I would acknowledge that I think he's a stronger run defender right now than he is a pass rusher. And, you know, people, obviously, when you look at interior players, if you're talking about taking them first round or two, you're probably looking for more pass rush than run defense. And so I acknowledge that, but I'm also a human being, so I have my own biases and subjectivity, and I am a sucker for run defending interior defensive players. I just love it. I just love it. Like you said, everything about how he defends the run, how he can close gaps using other people's bodies, the violence that he plays with. I just love it. So, you know, from a value standpoint, is that probably where you want to take those types of players in a vacuum? Oh, probably not. But, you know, again, I try to be self-aware with this process, and I know that's a bias for me. I know that.
Extremely low close rate, by the way, 11% career, 5 out of 45. But what that means is he's getting a lot of pocket morphing pressures, and that part I really liked about him. Other things to say, or do you want to move on to your number three guy?
No, let's move on. I know I've gotten us off a track with some of these tangents, so I'll try to be short again.
We've hit on some of the top guys already. So who's your number three?
All right, this is where I said you probably weren't going to like this. Dominique Orange is who I have at number three. Big citrus for me. Now, it's not necessarily because like I have a ton of notes, and I've talked about this on other sort of draft shows or podcasts that I've done, where if I have a lot of notes, it usually means one or two things: I really like you, or I'm confused about you. Okay. So I don't have a lot of notes on him, which can also is not necessarily indicative of good or bad. Sometimes it's very clear. Like, I try not to look at it that way as I'm taking the notes. I try not to label it whether it's good or bad. It's could I clearly see what type of player you are? That's really how I try to frame it in my mind. And sometimes when I have not as many notes, that's what it is. It's like, oh no, I watched a couple of games. This is very clear. This is clear, translucent packaging. I can see right through this. I know exactly who this guy is. And I think that's kind of what it was for me with Dominique Orange. It wasn't a lot of confusion or a lot of, like Peter Woods I talked about. I'm like, why is this happening? I saw this and now I don't see it. It wasn't like that with Orange. So I'm very concise. This is powerful. When he strikes blockers, they move. Solid quickness, you know, step and swim to split blocks. Better range than I expected for a guy who was, 322? And again, that's what I expect. Other people may say, well, I only seen him get to the B gap. Okay, maybe that's what you expected. I better range than what I expected. Inconsistent technique versus combo blocks. Can't get washed out of his gap and end up on the ground. OTG. I have that in my notes more than I like. Don't like to see, you know, guys on the ground. And I saw that a little bit more from him than I would like. But I think what doesn't always show up, and I don't know that he did any testing. Dane doesn't have him doing any.
No other testing.
At the combine.
5:30 other in the, as a 40.
Yeah. So he doesn't have him for anything, but there's at least one play, and maybe I'll retweet it after this. I've tweeted it out before, where he's having to chase, what was the ball? I don't know, it was a running back. It was some type of ball carrier. And you watch him chase this guy to the sideline. And he doesn't tackle him. He doesn't catch him. But he encourages him to step out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And he's moving. I mean, I know the schools have GPS data on this. Obviously, we don't have access to that. I would have loved to see what his GPS speed was on that, because you don't see a lot of guys his size moving the way he was moving on that play at 322. So, you know, is that, you know, okay, that means he's going to be a great player? No, of course not. But there are little hints like that I look for when I'm looking at overall athleticism, because the testing, certainly, you know, that's, you know, tangible data that you can use, but there's going to be things that show up on film from time to time where you're like, well, wait a minute, I didn't see that in the data, but that looks pretty good, right there. So, I think that's what stood out to me, was that I think there's some athleticism in there that maybe is a little untapped, right? Some of it can be what he was asked to do at Iowa State, because I think they primarily were a 3-3, 3-3-5 type of defense. I think I don't think they do a lot of four down stuff there, and so he's pretty much going to be head up, or he's going to be a shade on the center most of the time. Not to say he never lined up a three technique, because I'm probably sure he did. I didn't watch every single college snap, but of the games that I watched, he was kind of primarily head up, and I think he's got a little bit more in him than that. So I liked him. I certainly like him higher or more than consensus, not just you. Dane isn't as high on him easier. I think Dane has him down at number, what's he got him at? Number six. He's decent on him. But I don't think that the consensus likes him as much as I do. And I, like you just mentioned in our previous discussion, I'm fine with that.
That's cool. Yeah, we got differences. Okay, I'll go through the reasons why I had to drop him to the honorable mention level. Let's start by saying I think he's a fourth slash fifth round pick for me. So I have him pretty, you know, pretty far down, pretty big difference. Didn't like the fact that he didn't test anything and his athleticism isn't particularly good. His measurements are okay at 6'2", 322, and 33 3/8. That's fine. His tackling is terrible in college. It's a 17.4% career missed tackling number. That's a very troubling for a nose tackle. First of all, I want productivity, and he didn't really have a lot of that. And second of all, I want him to avoid missed tackles, and he had a lot of those. So a 2.3-1 in 25 is not a good number there, and particularly for a nose tackle. It's not like the strikeout to walk ratio it is for an inside linebacker. It's absolutely critical there. But for a, you know, you can do a lot of things to deny space in the run game and help your team win, or you could be a productive tackler like Kelly Gregg was and do it that way. And a lot of the wrestling background guys, they end up falling more into that category. With him, I think he's a nose tackle only in the NFL. He really, if I'm saying how he helped against the run, it was really a space denial game that he played. He's knocked down two passes in 854 college pass rush snaps. So for his size, that's not particularly good. He has a pretty good arm over move that is his go-to in the run game. If you look at the Iowa game, you'll see him use that a couple of different times. It's definitely a shed then chase player, which is unusual. A guy who's length and real good mass and whatnot. I expect it to be more likely he's going to be going to the bull rush a lot. You mentioned the plus pursuit effort, and I think this is a reasonable tangent to just talk about very briefly. The fastest that Dominique Orange can run at 5:30, we could translate that to a miles per hour. It'd be significantly faster than the fastest he would ever play on a field. But a lot of times it's, you know, what is your acceleration like and how much of that top speed can you really provide on the field in terms of you're looking at the defensive line? It's never a very high percentage of their total top speed. It's always, you know, about what you see in terms of pursuit there. And I would agree. So he's a plus pursuit effort guy. Does not do enough with the bull rush or his hands extended to be a viable passing down player. I don't even see him as a viable guy to provide pocket morphing kind of pressure there. So if he came to the Ravens, I think he'd be their fourth best nose tackle on the team behind Jones, Jenkins, and Okoye. Now, he'd have developmental upside. You know, hopefully he'd get coached up with the Ravens. And I don't hate him as a player. I'm just not sure I want to take a chance on him over, you know, years 2, 3, and 4 of Okoye, which would be one of the options. You know, you get 4 years of Orange beginning at age 22, or you get, you know, 3 more years of Okoye at whatever age he is, 24, 25 years old at this point. Actually, I guess you get only 2 more years and then you get the RFA year. But I'm just not as high on him as you are. I think he's got real flaws in his game. So I appreciate your commentary. And you know what? I'm going to go back and look at him. And is there one particular thing you would say, Ken, in your commentary, what I think you're missing is A for when I rewatch this?
No, I don't think you're missing anything. Something that I heard earlier in this draft cycle, I wish I could credit the person. I listened to probably more podcasts than I should, but it was something that has stuck with me ever since I heard it. He said, look, people that like to do this, that like to study the draft and evaluate players, it's not that we tend to see different things as much. Particularly with like the top projected guys, we all tend to see a lot of the same things, but how we value them is what differs. Right. So that's when people are like, am I missing anything? Same James, very similar thing. He thought he was missing. I'm like, I don't think you're missing anything. We just value things differently, and that's okay. You know, that's a part of what makes this fun is that if it was all robotic and we all saw things the same way and we all valued things the same way, there wouldn't be any fun in this. There wouldn't be any discussion or any debate. So no, I don't think you missed anything. I think we might maybe have a different value on certain things. Again, I acknowledge my run defense bias that I tend to prioritize that probably more than I should. But that, you know, again, run game and defense is kind of what my whole interest was in this game, right? When I started charting plays and charting, yeah, you know, Dre Roman's, right? That's where it was at. And so it's still kind of there. It doesn't mean that I'm not interested in the other parts of the game. I certainly am. But that, to me, those are like the things that, you know, get me the most excited to watch.
I want to make sure you get a plug for this, because you and Josh Mastaiko did some fantastic work on run game analysis.
Ancient history, Ken. Ancient history.
No, that's okay. It might be ancient history, but if you want to do run game modeling or run game analysis, take a look at what they did together and how good their product is. And you know, you might just go to @Abukari on Twitter and say, "Hey, could I have a link to that?" And I don't know if that's still that spreadsheet is out there somewhere.
We still got them.
Okay. All right, great stuff.
And it was fun. Those were fun years. Josh, man, is a great guy. He's kind of stepped away from all of this and is just, you know, enjoying his life, which, hey, by all means, I respect that. But yeah, we had some fun years doing that.
All right. So I your number two guy was Big Citrus then?
Number three was Big Citrus for me. And then number two was Kristen Miller, who you've already talked about.
Okay. And I had Caleb Banks at three. So I guess I get to introduce, I think, the last player in the group who's probably your number one. That's Caden McDonald of Ohio State.
Hey, look at that.
And what do you know? We did have the same guy at the top.
I think that's the first time we had the same player.
No, I have him at number two. So you have him at number one.
Oh,
so
okay.
A little difference there. But that means I get to badmouth him first, and then I'm not gonna do,
because
he's a one or two round player here. 21 in March, that's maybe one of the biggest numbers, but 6'2", 326. One of the youngest interior defensive linemen in this draft. Stops to missed tackle ratio is fantastic, 16.5 to 1 this last season, 33 stops and 2 missed tackles, 8.8 for his career is fantastic. Career of 5.8% missed tackle rate. He's been used primarily as an early down guy pretty much his whole career, even at Ohio State, where I think he has some pass rush things he can add, but only 51% pass snaps in his career. He lives on length and first step. He's the best run defender in the class. He did provide some pass rush juice this last year with three sacks. Extraordinarily productive tackle for a nose tackle, productive tackler for a nose tackle. He had 59... and that's 65 per PFR, which included 33 stops among those. And that's, you boil that down. He only played 218 run snaps. Now, he gets some tackles on pass snaps. He has 3 sacks, and he's, you know, probably a few other tackles he made on a receiver on that whole thing. That is an amazing number of tackles, 65 on 218 run snaps. And it's ridiculous. He knocked down 3 passes at the line of scrimmage, and that which doesn't seem that excessive, but he did it in only 353 college pass rush snaps. And you hear all these other guys I'm talking about have, you know, 2 out of 800, 1 out of 900, you know, kind of thing. I mean, he's gets his arms up, knows how to use them well, sets his feet very well, I think, versus double teams. That's not true of a lot of the people in this class. He has a lot of good bull then shed reps, so he's much more of a two-handed player who likes to control 2 gaps, move his guy backwards, morph the pocket that way. Kind of waits for an opponent to overcommit with a loss of balance. Since he's so big, he's had some success, you know, getting by his man that way. And bull rush is really his move. Plays a little high would be the only complaint I had. And it's like all big men, you know, if they can play low, they'd be great. When they can't, they're not as good. There's lots of developmental upside. Terrific nose tackle. And I think he's one of the nose tackles who I would be an agnostic to in terms of who you get, but the price is just too high. So I can't see the Ravens drafting him, you know, because the word's out on Caden McDonald. He's going to be one of the top picks in the draft.
Yeah, and that point that you mentioned about the ratio to, you know, snaps to tackles is something that Dane mentioned too. He says he's got 695 career snaps, and he averaged 32 per game in 2025. So I know last year he was playing primarily behind Tyleek Williams, who I think the Lions took pretty early. I think the Lions took him in the first round last year. And so, you know, he gets kind of a bigger role this year, but even still, you know, they're a little bit like Georgia, maybe not to the same extent as Georgia at Ohio State in terms of rotating defensive linemen, but a little bit like that, right? Where it's hard to log like a huge, huge snap load as a defensive lineman at either one of those schools, because they just believe in rotating guys and they get a ton of recruit, so you got plenty of guys to run through there. But yeah, again, another guy that I know is a primary run defender, and like you said, you know, that's valued the way that it's valued in the draft, right? It's not typically something you want to expend an early round pick on, particularly not in the first round. But he's so good. He's so good at it. He's just so good at it. So I'm not, I've got notes. They pretty much all echo what you say. So I'm not going to rehash. I think you laid it out wonderfully. If you want a guy who's going to come in and I think immediately contribute to your run defense and improve it, I think this is your guy.
I would completely agree with that. He's the, without question, the best run defender in the draft. There's some other guys who have pretty solid, you know, stops to miss tackles and whatnot. He's just, he's absurd in terms of the productivity he's had. So, Michael, anything else, any other player that you maybe looked at that honorable mention or anything you'd like to mention before you go off air here?
Who was your number one? Was it also Kate McDonald?
My number one was Woods.
Oh, Peter, that's right. That's right. Because we, yeah. Okay. I feel like we've hit a lot of the guys. I think I even squeezed in some of my honorable mention guys at the end of the first show. A guy, I will say this, I mentioned his name, but I'd like to get your thought on him because he's a guy who I think early in the process, back during the season, Zane Durant from Penn State.
Okay.
I think it was a name that I would hear a lot and people say, hey, you know, you check this guy out. It's a little bit of Matabike similarity there, just in terms of athleticism, body type and athleticism. And I'm watching him and I think you see it. I think you see on the field, I'd have to go back and pull up his testing numbers to see what he did, if he did. But I think you see the athleticism on the field, but you don't see the production. So I was just wondering if you looked at him, what you thought about him.
I did not, and that's I appreciate now you've provided me with two names to go back and look at that I didn't have on my radar at all. I had one other guy I do want to talk about, and that's Xavien Harris, who I thought might be at the top of your list, and I didn't want to do it, but he's got flags and flags going on here in terms of what's going on. An off-field flag for domestic violence, which might certainly rule him off with the Ravens. And he had another, that was the second of two arrests that he had. And there's other guys who have like a DWI. And am I concerned about that? Maybe. I think back to my own college days and I'd like to think that I didn't make as many really bad mistakes, but that was one that I probably was guilty of and fortunately never got caught for. In terms of Harris, 6'8", 330, real long arms, huge man, has a very high missed tackle rate. Then I look at him, he only had two passes knocked down in four seasons, but he also had several blocked kicks. He might be the guy who had three blocked kicks or led the whole NCAAs in blocked kicks this year.
He's the guy, six career blocks, four field goals and two PATs.
Yeah, well, that's good. But anyway, I know a lot of people had him higher on their list. I just want to say he is my number 11 guy. Did you have him in your thoughts?
I did not, but I'm looking at him now, and I'm remembering seeing that because I see the jersey number because a lot of times that's what happened with these guys. I remember jersey numbers because
number 51.
I may not have got to, and he's huge. So you see a 6'7" guy out there. I didn't scroll down to that part yet. Oh, yeah, 6'7", 6'7", 330. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You see, you know, just that body type on the field, and it catches your eye. You're like, whoa, what is that? Who is that? So I did not know about the off-the-field stuff, and he was a guy who, again, I didn't watch directly, but when you're watching, I was probably watching some offensive player against Ole Miss, and, you know, defensive guys kind of pop or catch your eye. And again, just the physical dimensions, you're like, oh, look at that. But no, I'm going to have to go back and check him out. And yeah, I see that section down in Dane. He puts that under the weaknesses, obviously, the arrest. So yeah, that's definitely something teams are going to have to wrestle with.
Yeah. All right, my friend. Always so much fun talking football. I look forward to these episodes more than any other. I look forward to the draft episodes in general, but anyone I get to do with you. I know it's going to be a lot of new stuff, a lot of cool stuff. Tell folks where they can find your work or talk to you online if they have a question about football.
All right. So despite the degradation on the site, I'm still on Twitter. So you can find me at Abukari. That's Abukari. Of course, you know, you can still look up, right? At this point, you'd be going to look up past episodes of the Deep Cover Podcast and the Fire Zone Show. But hey, some people like to go back and reminisce. But we do have that bracket show in the hopper coming up. For Deep Cover. usually we try to do it like 2 or 3 days before the draft. We try to wait as late as we can because we've seen in years past that there'll be some news or some movement that'll happen like that day before the draft, sometimes the day of. So we try to wait as late as we can. But yeah, you can check me out on Twitter. You can, you know, check out those podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. And I don't engage as much as I used to on Twitter, but yeah, I'm still around here and there.
All right. They changed some things about Twitter, which are making it more difficult to use now. I was a big user of TweetDeck. So I, you know, I'll be working here during the day and I'll have the TweetDeck up on one of the tabs and I'll go over to it and I'll look at it. And now they want to charge $32 a month for TweetDeck.
Yeah, it's crazy. The stuff that's going on
that's
there.
That's a lot of money.
I'm on Blue Sky. I know a lot of people kind of hopped over there shortly after Elon took over Twitter. I haven't been as active on Blue Sky. I'd even have to look up my handle. I think it might still be at Avogar. I think I tried to keep the same one. But, you know, for folks that are over there, I need to kind of probably pick up the volume over there a little bit because I know it was, you know, sort of like an exodus for some people to go there from Twitter.
Yeah, certainly a lot of people moving along. Other folks out there, please hit me up if you've got an idea for an off-season pod. And at this point, I think we're probably going to be after the draft in terms of roster building strategy, something different you'd like to see from the Ravens, what you think the offense or defense might look like. Should be an episode we can talk about no more than 30 minutes. We're trying to provide some other shorter content for people. I want to talk to some new people too. This show is all about almost an open mic for people who are fans of the Baltimore Ravens to come up and have a conversation with me and talk about something new and cool. And this is where I find people to be on the other shows that I have all year long. So, you know, I did 386 pods last year. Ooh. Most of those had a guest, probably 340 of them had a guest. So, you know, I have to have a very deep pool of nice folks to talk football with. Michael, I appreciate all the contributions you've made to this show over the year. You've probably been on, I would think, close to 50 shows by now over the years.
That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. Has that many times?
Wow. I would guess. I mean,
well, I appreciate you having me on that many times. I had no idea.
I haven't actually gone back and checked the number, but I know you're one of the people that everybody loves, you and Coach Evans and a whole lot of people. I don't want to, as soon as I start naming names, I'm going to leave somebody out. Yep. But there's a whole lot of great people who are on the show. I appreciate it. And I'm looking to meet more. Michael, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, anytime. Hey, it was fun, and I hope people, you know, get something out of it, and I look forward to talking more in the future.
We'll talk to you next time on Film Study.